Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. We have an unusual program in store this evening. I'm going to be joined by a good friend, former naval aviator, Top Gun instructor, currently an American Airlines captain, and the guy who started this radio program for me, invited me to join him in this endeavor. His name is Tom Garcia, and we will have a guest, John Casey, an author, former NASA scientist and researcher, talking about climate change, but not the kind of change that we've been hearing so much about, almost ad nauseum. And finally, because we're going to be devoting the first hour to the issue of climate change, and again, going in a different direction from what most people have been talking about, if you stick with me past the top of the hour, I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about a news story that should have been the headline story for television and radio programs across America today, but incredibly, nobody was talking about it. It's the link to the Canadian train terror attack involving some Tunisians, some very interesting developments, parallels the concerns that I have been voicing before congressional hearings and at every opportunity that I've been given to have my voice heard in public, especially, of course, on this great program that I thank Tom for creating and joining with me in doing this. But let me start out by reminding you who I am and why I'm here. I am Michael Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Spent 30 years with that agency, half of those years investigating terrorists and narcotics traffickers. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings, again, trying to wake up our leaders in Washington and trying to wake up we the people so we can be an informed electorate who can apply the appropriate pressure to the politicians who claim to represent us, and so that we can speak intelligently with our neighbors, with our friends, with family members, because, you know, the First Amendment's not just about freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of religion. Certainly they are up there on that list. But it's also about the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, if you don't have grievances in this area, better check for a pulse or perhaps a flatline EEG. And it's also about the right for peaceable assemblage, because the Founding Fathers understood that you cannot have true democracy without debate, discourse, disagreement, perhaps. All they said is leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives at home. And I'm with them on that one. But we do need to have discourse. And we need to listen carefully to the people who claim to be giving us advice, because they're not always right. And that's why the topic for this evening's program, I think, is so important. Whether you come to agree or disagree with John Casey, I want you to think, because that's where it all begins, the thinking process. As I've told my kids, the only thing that keeps the human species at the top of the food chain is our ability to use our brains. We stop doing that, we quickly fall to the bottom of the food chain. Three websites I would love for you to check out. First of all, michaelcutler.net, one word. My last name is C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I have another website, talkborder.com, one word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R. And finally, I have been for a number of years a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit. Got lots of good friends out there. And every now and again, I do get to visit. But here I am in New York, Tom Garcia joining us from Florida. But capsweb.org is the website for Californians for Population Stabilization. Please go to their website, visit my websites, and thank you for joining us this evening. Tom Garcia, happy Friday. Thank you for joining me. It's an unusual evening, isn't it?
It's my pleasure. Well, you know, we plotted this out a few weeks ago, and I've been waiting for this. We're going to have a fun time tonight. John Casey will be joining us at 10 minutes after the hour. Interesting book. I interviewed him about a year and a half ago. I know you're going to find him very interesting, and I was looking forward to just co-hosting with you, being a co-host, your sidekick for the night.
There you go. Well, Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson ride again.
There you go.
But I'm not sure who's sidekick, because you're the guy who started all this, Tom. And You have an amazing background. And, you know, my original background was in science. I was an engineering major. I've been into astronomy ever since second grade, which taught me a lot of things, including the ability to use analogies, which I think have been helpful in explaining things not scientific. Immigration seems to cause people to fog over or glaze over because of the size of the numbers and the magnitude of the issue. So analogies really are helpful. But we really all need to be practical scientists so that we can make, again, intelligent decisions about a host of issues. And that's why when they talk about science, technology, engineering, and math curricula, folks, I don't care what you do for a living. We really need to have an understanding of the world that we live in. And science, I think, does a great job of providing that insight. So this should really be an exciting conversation. We're expecting John Casey to be joining us shortly. Where in the world has Tom Garcia been flying of late?
Oh, boy, I've been all over the place. The last trip I did was just a domestic trip. And when I say just a domestic trip, I don't even remember where it was. But I remember the international trips I've done lately. I've been to Panama, Curacao. A lot of them trips lately I've been going to the Caribbean, which is nice. Down in Jamaica, let's see, where else? I don't think I've been to the Virgin Islands in a while, but places like Managua. And that's all I can think of off the top of my head. It's more places
okay.
than that, but it's fun. I love going. The reason I fly out of Miami south is because I like going to warm places. I don't like the cold, and I generally get to go to nice warm places all year long.
And no wonder this book then really has your attention.
Because I like a warm climate, but what John's going to tell us about is it's going to get cold. And, you know, I'll put in a plug here that a lot of people don't talk about. About 8 years ago, I wanted to do a little research myself into global warming. And I came up with some interesting factoids. I have an engineering background, so I know numbers. So
right.
I can take numbers that scientists, you know, reliable scientists have put together, and I went to multiple sources. And the first thing I found was that in the last 1 million years, using the ice core samples that Al Gore tries to tell us prove that we're in a global warming condition, show in the last 1 million years, 8 ice ages in a row, and they come with alarming regularity. They last a long time. In fact, this planet has been frozen and cold more than it has been warm. So that's the first fact. Now, not to scare anybody, there is an ice age coming, but it's going to take thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of years to hit its peak. So you don't have to worry about that. But the one other thing I found that was quite interesting, and actually on the show, John Casey, a NASA engineer, confirmed my own calculations. Of all the CO2 in the air, man contributes to the total atmosphere. Well, first of all, how much CO2 is in the atmosphere? It's pretty consistent across all sources. 0.03%. Sounds like a small amount, doesn't it?
Yes.
Of that 0.03% of the atmosphere, man's contribution to the total amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is 0.0004%. So a lot of these computer models are based on us doubling our CO2 output, and that raising the global temperature 3 degrees. Well, I had an article, we're not going to get into it probably, maybe if John Casey's familiar with it, that talks about these computer models. And in fact, we have a scientist, Roy Spencer. If you go to American Thinker on May 8th, nice article written by him, and I'll distill it down into one bottom line thing. He came up with a model. He came up with a very scientific model for looking at and measuring using space satellites the global temperature sensitivity, something that scientists would love to measure, but they've never figured out how to do it, and he actually came up with a way, kind of stumbled upon it. You know, isn't that how stuff happens in science? Yeah, he stumbled upon it, and what he determined was that doubling the CO2, or our current sensitivity, is not what all of these computer models are predicting. It's 7 times less than what they're predicting. So in other words, we wouldn't have to double our CO2 output. We would have to 7 times double, so 14 times. We'd have to increase our CO2 output 14 times.
I think I see John in the queue. Let me go bring him on.
I'll go talk. Okay,
you go ahead. I'll let you do the honors. You invited him, so you go do it.
All right, so I'll be right back with him.
Okay.
Thanks.
While we're waiting for John to be joining us, I do have a cure for global cooling, if that turns out to be the case. Just put more members of Congress in front of more microphones, and perhaps the hot air will keep things nice and warm, I think. But, but this is the point, folks. We really need to give serious thought to theories, suppositions, and you may not come to agree with what our guest has to say, and that's fine. All that I want everyone to always understand is that there are always more than one side to a discussion. We've become a nation of people who tend to march lockstep with one another. It's always a bad idea, and at times it can be downright dangerous. Lockstep thinking without questioning what you're told is really, I think, the express lane, if you will, to a purgatory. We always have to challenge what we're told, who's telling us, and what the motivation might be. Those are very important questions. When you look at comprehensive reform, and you know that's my usual deal, understand why people want to suddenly legalize millions of foreign workers. This is about having people at the very top of the food chain making even more profit than they've been already, driving down American wages, doing a lot of things that would not be good for the average American, but would be fabulously wonderful for the super wealthy. This is crazy. It flies in the face of what America has always been about. It really could, in my judgment, sow the seeds to the destruction of the middle class, which already probably should be on the endangered species list. So this is why it's so darn important that we really pay attention. You know, Johnny Cochran of OJ fame said, if you can't trust the messenger, then you can't trust the message. Pay attention to who the messengers are, folks. Tom Garcia, I believe our guest is with us.
He is, yes. Go ahead, Mike.
Excellent. John Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure to be with you and Tom.
Well, you have an interesting background. Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about what you've been doing for the last few decades, I guess?
Well, I have had a very fortunate career. I've spent a lot of time doing some good work in the space program in particular, and more recently in the last three quarters of a decade doing climate research. But I have been a White House space program advisor, consultant to NASA headquarters, space shuttle engineer, and more recently have been kind of leading the charge here in the U.S. to bring everyone up to speed, including the media and our folks in Washington, on what's really happening with the climate, specifically the fact that we've got a new cold era, a new cold climate that has begun. That has led me to do a number of things, not only create the Space and Science Research Corporation, but I'm the editor of the Global Climate Status Report. My record of predictions for major climate change is among the best, and according to Watchdog Wire, is the best in the United States. So I've been quite active in climate research, but again, a very fortunate career.
This is going a little bit off topic, but I would be remiss and spank myself if I didn't ask the question. And by the way, I want you to know that your career path really was what my dream career path had been before I changed direction and wound up as a federal agent. But to me, aerospace and the astronauts, the space program was something that has happened, I guess, with so many people, captured our imagination as children. I actually got letters from Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom as a kid. I had the privilege of meeting some of the astronauts. So I have to ask you, How does it feel with the space shuttle grounded and now made a museum exhibit? It seemed to me to be premature, but I'm not an engineer and I didn't work on the program. I just have to ask that question before we get to the topic of climate.
Well, of course, like most people in the space program, we were all disappointed to see President Obama pull the rug out from under the shuttle program,
yep.
And especially how he did it. We all knew that the shuttle would have to be retired at some point, but there was no real aggressive plan to come up with a replacement. in a manner that we all thought would preserve the talent base that we had and would give us all a good sense for which way the future of the space program was going. So my opinion is we've been misled. We've had a lack of leadership in that area coming out of the White House, and we're kind of drifting aimlessly right now.
That's a pretty sad assessment, but as Hillary Clinton might ask, what difference does it make, I guess?
Right.
That phrase has been sticking in my craw, especially
it should,
since the hearing.
Yes.
But, you know, I do want to thank you for your service to America.
Thank you. Because truly
extraordinary achievements, and that program. My mom used to have a wonderful expression, may she rest in peace, you don't throw away the dirty water till you have clean water. I think that people expected a transition, not an abrupt crashing stop. But here we are, aren't we?
Now, to get
to the topic, your book title kind of sums it up. And I remember reading an article. I don't know if you were here or if you were listening when I was saying it, but I started out being an astronomy nut going back to second grade. And I recently have read some material that indicates that our sun is, in fact, a variable star, which seems to march parallel to what your findings are, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, our sun is a main sequence yellow star.
Right.
It does vary, but it is not of the extreme variable star type.
Right.
It's actually
but it does fluctuate.
Common star. But it does vary, and it does have cycles that affect our climate here on Earth. And it's really, that's the core issue of the research I've done and the reason for trying to be so aggressive about people getting ready, getting prepared for the new cold climate. The sun has varied again. It does so at least on a 206-year cycle that brings us dramatic changes in climate.
That's interesting, because I also know there's an 11-year cycle, in fact, the first international geophysical year going back to 1958 when we launched Explorer 1 and then Vanguard and all the other satellites, and Van Allen came up with the Van Allen radiation belts and so forth back in 58, 59. So we know it goes through solar maximums, solar minimums, and so forth, but I didn't realize, but in other words, there's a 206-year cycle that affects total energy output of the sun. Is that what we're saying?
That's correct. The sun varies on fairly predictable cycles. There is a 90 to 100-year cycle and a 206-year cycle. There are 400, 800, 1600, 2400-year cycles, et cetera. But those very large cycles don't affect us. At least they don't affect us now and may not affect us for hundreds of years. So my relational cycle theory that tells us when climate change will occur is based on the 206, the 90 to 100 cycle, and some smaller cycles that we can actually experience, as we are all now experiencing the changeover from the warming phase of the 206-year cycle to the global cooling phase of the 206-year cycle.
Well, I'm gathering that you were taking these measurements from satellites like the Orbiting Solar Observatory or one of those satellites, or...
Well, we use satellite data to make comparisons and correlations, but the satellite data has only been around since the 70s when the modern satellite era began to track global climate change and temperatures going back hundreds and thousands of years. We don't have really a lot of climate measurement data beyond 1850 here in the U.S. and beyond the late 1600s in Europe. So what we end up doing is using proxies for global temperature. We do corings in Greenland and ice corings in Antarctica and deep seabed corings globally, and we measure various chemicals in those cores to determine how climate and temperature varied over the longer scales.
So in other words, the chemical composition of the ice core changes with the Earth's temperature?
Exactly. And we measure that in specific radioisotopes of carbon-14, beryllium-10, and oxygen-18. Those are the most common isotopes we measure in each of those cores, and they track identically with temperature variation. So that's how we can go back hundreds and thousands of years and determine what temperature it was.
Wow, that's fascinating. And so projecting by what happened previously, you presume that it's going to be symmetrical and what preceded will now come again. Is that the idea?
That's exactly the case. If you go back 1,200 years, I went back much more, but if you go back 1,200 years, for example, the 206-year cycle varies within a one sigma period of about 23 and a half years. So even with that, I correctly computed that the solar hibernation, this new cold phase, would begin shortly after 2007. That's exactly when it did.
And observing the sun, what looks different? I mean, I would imagine sunspots wouldn't really be the issue. Is it the size of the corona, the photosphere? What exactly do you measure to make that determination?
There are, in fact, quite a few parameters we measure to determine when climate is changing, at least here at the Space and Science Research Corporation. We have 24 different climate parameters that we measure or we keep track of to determine climate variation. The sunspot track is one of the most reliable. And if you look at the current 11-year solar cycle, and it's beginning back in 08, you'll see that this is one of the smallest, least active solar cycles we've had in 200 years.
Wow. Now here's another question that at least comes to my feeble mind. We know that everybody worries about CMEs, coronal mass ejections, and
correct,
the possible
correct.
Damage it would do to the power grid,
right.
And so forth. Are we more likely or less likely to see CMEs, coronal mass ejections, as the sun goes into what you refer to as a hibernation?
Clearly, the trend would be to have less energetic CMEs, solar flares, et cetera, coming off the sun for the next 30 years. Yeah.
So that's good news. We're not as likely to get slammed.
It's a good news. We're entering a long, multi-decadal quiet period for the sun, which would, unfortunately, this is the best period to go to Mars in because we have the least
solar radiation.
Radiation threat for
yeah.
long-term space flight. Unfortunately, we're not doing that this
year. We don't have a bus for the school trip.
Right, right.
Tom, are you with us?
Yeah, hey, I just want to ask a couple questions. First of all, you kind of compared this on your website a little bit, the period we're entering to the Dalton minimum. Maybe you could
explain that
to the
listeners. Hey, wait a second. He's got a website. Let's put that out first of all. Folks, why don't you take this down? Let's first put the website up there. Go ahead.
Well,
spaceandscience.net. Yeah. But you've got a couple of them, so tell us all of your websites.
Well, that's spaceandscience.net is for the Space and Science Research Corporation. When you go to that website, there's a lot of information there. And that website was specifically set up to give people a resource to go to find out the truth about climate change as opposed to what the mainstream media and the current administration is trying to tell us. So you'll find an awful lot there. You will especially find the Global Climate Status Report, and it comes in two versions, the free executive summary, which anyone can download, and the Global Climate Status Report, the big 52-page report with each of the 24 climate parameters specified and all the charted data and everything. That's also there, but that's on a fee basis. But the free executive summary has a lot of information in it. You can download that now. The other item is for my book, Cold Sun. The website for that is coldsun.net.
And, well, you know, what I always look at, you know, having been an investigator, is motivation. Why do you believe, if those who take the opposite viewpoint are wrong, what do you think motivated them? Do you think they realize they're wrong? Is there an agenda? How do you see those who would disagree with you?
Well, there are several categories of people who disagree with me. And first off, it's important to understand that when I first announced my predictions and my theory, I was pretty well strongly
castigated.
Attacked by just
yeah.
about everyone.
Yeah.
Conservatives, liberals, the media, the government, and especially the scientific community. That last comment is fully expected. Anytime someone outside the scientific community or any field of science comes in and makes some kind of grand statement, all history has shown that's the community that attacks the most.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an orthodoxy to their ideologies.
That's right, and especially when it's funded by the government. So that's item number two. There's the orthodoxy in confronting conventional science establishment, but number two is the fact that I'm also undermining their opportunity to get more of this gravy train of global warming research funding that we've seen for the last 25 years. The third component is because I don't have a PhD and 100 research papers, there's a somewhat of a threat to their profession and their own research capability when someone like me comes in from the outside. Even though I have a strong space program background, I'm not a climate scientist.
What was your degree in?
Al Gore isn't either, is he?
No, well, certainly not. But that's but he might describe that comment as an inconvenient truth.
Yes. Well, Al Gore describes me as a pseudoscientist who counts sunspots.
Oh, brother. Well, and what is he counting? And, you know, you're in good company with being a scientific heretic because, you know, throughout history, whether it was Galileo or Da Vinci or Albert Einstein, you're in good company. And I remember I'd lost family members to cancer. And back in the 70s, there were those who said that diet played a role in cancer. And, boy, they wanted to drum them off the planet. And, of course, now everybody acknowledges that diet does play a very important role in cancer. So it's just amazing what passes for the willingness to think openly and freely. And when I'm on college campuses, you know, my issue usually is immigration. I really have come to think of all too many universities almost like a military base where everyone's expected to march in lockstep on the parade grounds, and God help you if you fall out of step.
That's correct.
How's that for an analogy, using analogies?
That's pretty much the way it's been on climate, too.
So where do you go from here? How do you get people to listen? Are they becoming a little bit more open-minded or closed-minded? And besides,
well, quite
you know,
a bit,
castigating,
quite a bit of
what harm has it done to you?
What harm?
Yeah, I mean, have they gone after you in what ways? How does it manifest itself?
Oh, well, you can still go on the web, for example, and do a search on John Casey, climate change, or climate prediction expert John Casey, or any combination of those kinds of words, and you'll find there's still a few lingering websites and comments about me that were started back in 2008, 2009, that are still on the web. Very few new comments like that, but those attacks were quite vicious. You know, I had just finished doing a classified project in Iraq for the White House, and yet these people were calling me a scam artist, a hoaxer, a fraud. I mean, you name it, because I stood up and was so vocal saying man-made global warming was bad science and was disproved. And all of a sudden I got attacked, and just about every word was hurled at me, again, to discredit me personally, because they couldn't attack my science.
Well, it's interesting. Well, you know, you could imagine taking on immigration as I do. I've experienced similar stuff. I remember JFK had a wonderful expression, you judge a man by his friends as well as his enemies. I'm proud of both of those groups. I think I've acquired them for the right reasons. It sounds like you did also.
That's exactly the case here, too, yes.
Absolutely remarkable. You know, we're coming up at the bottom of the hour. I know that we're going to try something new. We have a couple of sponsors. This is a new endeavor. When we hit the bottom of the hour, Tom, why don't you run those commercials, or that commercial? I think we were going to do one commercial at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, and I think we're there. So
go for it.
Our sponsors, we've got Kohl's Department Store. They have a big weekend sales going on, event this weekend, and starting next Wednesday, it's the beginning of summer sales, so you don't want to miss out on that. And, of course, Susan Bradford, one of our favorite authors, she's recently come out with a book
and we'll tell you about that in the end. And she's got three other very exciting books coming up. So here we go with our ad spot for about the next 2 minutes.
This next song is dedicated to Vicky Cooper. Vicky's a mother of three who recently saved $124 spring shopping at Kohl's. By stacking the savings, she not only took advantage of a great sale, she also saved $20 using her Kohl's cash. Congrats, Vicky. This one's for you.
Great savings that make you go Kohl's. Don't miss Kohl's Get Set for Summer sale starting Wednesday. Kohl's, expect great things.
From one of our favorite authors and the author of Lynched, the story of the railroading of Jack Abramoff comes four exciting new books. Available now is the Full Court Press. How the Bush administration managed the media through embedded reporters, talking points, blacklists, intimidation, back channels, and clever PR. This book is based on interviews with some of the leading journalists and PR strategists who shaped the public's perception of Operation Iraqi Freedom and the administration of George W. Bush. You can buy this book right now at SusanBradford.org for $19.99 paperback and $2.99 for the Kindle version. And that's not the end of it. There are three more books coming soon. The Abramoff story picks up where Lynched leaves off. This book is the Gossip Girl of the lobbying world. Get up and personal with the shenanigans of the nation's elite to discover how they obtain their money and power and lord it over the rest of us. Indian giving. The federal government giveth and the federal government taketh away. Just ask any Indian. Learn what the nation's elites have long understood, that the road to infinite riches and power leads through Indian country. And last but not least, the United Church of Heist. What happened to the United Church of Christ, the largest, most distinguished Protestant denomination in the United States? And how did this venerable church become associated with the rhetoric of Reverend Jeremiah Wright and the policies of Barack Obama? Don't miss these intriguing books. Go to SusanBradford.org today.
Hey, listen, I want to just ask a question here of Mr. Casey. What kind of implications come with this 20 to 30-year cooling period that we've started into now? What kind of global implications are we looking at?
The predictions for this next solar hibernation are based on the last one. The last time this occurred was from 1793 to 1830. And during that period of time, according to historian John D. Post, we had the world's worst or greatest subsistence crisis in the history of mankind. What he was talking about was it was so cold and crops globally were damaged so badly that many people starved to death, even if they were able to keep from freezing to death. Some are also saying now that perhaps I have even gotten it wrong and that it's actually going to be much worse than the 1793 to 1830 period or the Dalton minimum. Some are now suggesting it's going to be as bad as it was from 1600 to 1745, which was the primary little ice age period of time. And during that time, New York Harbor froze over, the London Thames River froze over. Much of the Baltic Sea was frozen over and stayed frozen over, so much so they built hotels and stores and roadways across the ocean because it had frozen over.
Wow.
So that's
what about
how
volcanic
we look at
activity?
It. Well, a curious correlation that we also found here at the SSRC and other geologists have discovered around the world is that when we go into these very cold eras, for some reason, we don't understand the mechanics yet, but for some reason we also get our worst earthquakes and our worst volcanic eruptions. Again, the last time this cold cycle, this 206-year cycle hit, here in the U.S., we had the worst series of earthquakes ever recorded. That was in the New Madrid Fault, basically from St. Louis to Memphis is the geology, geographical area. But we had roughly three magnitude 8 earthquakes within a few months of each other. Never before been recorded, but it happened right here in the middle of the U.S. During that period of time, the Mississippi flowed backwards before it started to build a new path south to the Gulf of Mexico. And also during that period of time, we had the worst ever recorded volcanic eruption. That was Mount Tambora in Indonesia in April of 1815, which by many researchers created the year without a summer, which was during 1816. Here in the U.S. during that period of time, we had snow and ice in the middle of August.
Wow.
So we do expect the same kind of cycle. In fact, it's already begun, beginning with the 9.0 earthquake that hit Japan and knocked out the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. We are, in fact, predicting other major earthquakes just around the corner.
But it's interesting, trying to put the two pieces together, activity on the sun with the geological activity, that seems kind of hard to, I mean, are there any theories about what connects that?
There are a couple, but fundamentally it just shows how intimately tied we are to what happens in our solar system, which is dominated by the sun. The sun clearly dominates climate change when you look at all the data and look at the correlations, whereas man's influence by producing CO2 is minuscule at best. But if you look at what the sun is doing, it's basically making us warmer or colder by increasing or decreasing on its energy output. One of the theories, then, to answer your question, is that somehow the heating of the mantle by the sun, once it stops and it goes into the cold phase, causes the mantle to shift abruptly.
Huh.
And when that happens, that may generate earthquakes and volcanic activity.
That's interesting.
But that's
everything is interconnected.
Is,
what I find remarkable, you know, the scientific method, and I don't have to tell you, is that you eliminate all the variables except for the one you're testing for. We don't even know what all the variables are, don't we?
You know, that's well said. What we have done is thrown away billions and billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, on a theory that we knew didn't work, i.e. greenhouse gas effect. And yet we've spent so little on the sun and its variation and its impact on the climate. And that's reflected in our own government. We have not one office and not one federal dollar being spent on the new global cooling phase, and yet that's the only climate that we have right now.
Did you have the opportunity to work with the SOHO satellite, the Solar Orbiting Observatory, or...?
No, I was in the shuttle side when I did work as a shuttle engineer and then later as an advisor to NASA.
Interesting.
So I never got into the satellite side then, although I'm quite familiar with it.
Yeah, I actually downloaded the program, and I used to, you know, take a peek at it every few days when I was just doing a little bit of daydreaming and trying to put pieces of all sorts of other stuff together. You know, it seems to come at us so quickly from so many directions simultaneously, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
I sometimes feel as though I'm standing under Niagara Falls with a bucket trying to catch all the water.
From a climate measurement standpoint, with our 24 different parameters we have to monitor constantly, that's how we feel about it.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you watch the congressional hearings and you listen to the blather. And I was just saying that, you know, maybe the solution to global cooling is to allow more politicians to have access to microphones more frequently. Maybe they could help keep us warm.
Certainly the overheated ego of mankind has contributed to global warming.
Isn't that remarkable, though?
Yes.
The hubris that we've seen, you know, I understand. I didn't see the story. It was more than I could deal with this morning after having listened to the hearing on Benghazi. But apparently now Mayor Bloomberg has decided that we should not be having butter in New York anymore. So it was the big gulp drinks. It was too much salt, too much sugar, women breastfeeding their children, and now we're adding butter to this unholy mix. It's kind of like, when does it end?
Well, certainly one of the many ripple effects, the ill effects of this global warming theory is all of these various programs that politicians have decided to implement using this global warming theory as justification. And, of course, none of it is valid.
But people are probably making tons of money off of it.
Oh, no question. I mean, look at Al Gore. He's profited quite well by selling a myth.
Well, you know, I guess maybe if what you're saying is accurate, he should run a sideshow somewhere. Step right up.
Well, the sideshow would have to not include facts, that's for sure.
But you know what disturbs me, and I don't know if I don't know enough to say I agree or disagree with you, John, and I'm going to be very blunt. But you're raising issues that I've always thought about as a layman. And it goes back to what I always tell people and what I started saying before you came on the program today. What I want our fellow Americans to do is a little bit of independent thinking. Don't ever take Mike Cutler's word for anything, because I might be getting it wrong on whatever issue. We've become a nation of people who want a 10-word soundbite. It's like instant breakfast. Just add water, stir, and move on to the next issue. We really have to challenge what we're hearing, who's telling us, and what their motivation might be, and whether it's global warming, whether it's immigration, whatever the issue is. I really think that Americans better get back in the habit of doing some heavy intellectual lifting and really pay attention, because I think we're really being bamboozled, whether it's global warming, whether it's comprehensive immigration reform, whether it's education. There's a whole host of issues that we're getting slammed as a country and as a people, and don't always presume that people telling you things are looking out for your best interest just because they tell you they are.
Absolutely, and that's the big picture on any subject, and certainly with regard to climate change. Now, there are two things I always tell people when they ask me why should they believe me or anyone else with a theory on climate change. I usually tell them two things. Number one, look at the facts, the actual data. What are the trends? What are the temperature changes telling us? Are we, in fact, getting warmer or colder? Number two, when it comes to who do you want to believe, that's also fairly easy. If you look at those like me who have been using solar cycles to predict climate change, we have a real good record of our climate predictions coming to pass. And in fact, our specific predictions we made for this solar cycle were 100% different than NASA, and yet we turned out to have predicted this climate cycle perfectly. So the second point then is, what's the track record of the person you're relying on? Do they have a good track record or no track record? If you go to the UN people, the Obama people on climate change, they don't have a track record. They've always been wrong.
That's interesting. And I remember back in the 70s, initially, the so-called climatologists were talking about global cooling, by the way, if you probably remember that.
I do.
And they went from, we're about to have an ice age, to, oh, my God, the oceans are going to overflow. And by the way, what was interesting about that is, if you melt ice, as in icebergs, I mean, yes, there will be runoff from the mountains and so forth, but talking about about the icebergs melting, well, you know, if you put ice in a glass and the glass is heated and the ice melts, the water doesn't overflow from the glass, because ice actually occupies more space, not less space, than water.
Well, that is certainly the case. I use a glass with ice during some of my presentations and allow it to melt and show people it hasn't changed. And that's why...
Am I allowed to say great minds think alike?
Well, that's why the melting of the Arctic ice means nothing in terms of sea level. The only ice, when it melts, that's important to us from a sea level rise standpoint is the ice that's on top of land.
Right, the mountains.
Because when that melts, it does add to the sea level.
Yep.
But, of course, we don't have to worry about that either. Now that the global ice mass balance has stopped decreasing and is now increasing again.
Totally amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We're constantly bombarded by news media and politicians telling us that it's getting warmer and warmer, that the sea levels are going to rise indefinitely because of melting glacial ice, when all the trend data says no.
You know, it's funny. I have to interject this because I'm going to take a couple of minutes after the top of the hour to speak to my listeners a little bit about the latest news about the terror bombing in Boston and this plot that, thank God, was thwarted that was going to affect trains running between New York and Canada. But, you know, what's so astonishing is that right after the Boston bombing, you had Chuck Schumer. My gosh, what this guy has done in terms of damage because of his immigration laws, the amnesty of 86. And he said, you know, if comprehensive reform had been enacted, these terrorists couldn't have been hiding in the shadows. They weren't hiding in the shadows. You know, don't let the facts get in the way of the narrative. Right. One guy was a naturalized citizen. The other guy had a green card. What shadows were they hiding in? And, in fact, his program, comprehensive reform, would have required or would require that we provide unknown millions of aliens without even a face-to-face interview with identity documents when we can't verify who they are. What better way would you have as a terrorist of concealing yourself and hiding in plain sight? And we saw where the 9/11 Commission found that was what prior terrorists had done. In fact, I gave testimony to the 9/11 Commission. So you sit in your house, probably the same way that you do. You can probably relate to my frustration. You listen to mistruths and flat-out, bald-faced lies, and you say to yourself, how many people are drinking this toxic Kool-Aid? How many times have you asked yourself that question?
Oh, I ask all the time. Every time I get in front of a group of people who have been bombarded with this propaganda for many years about man-made climate change, and then they hear the truth, it's quite a reaction. But you're absolutely right. We're bombarded with this stuff all the time.
And you know what's funny, and I'm sure you've seen this, but I wouldn't doubt you've had a comparable experience. I've spoken on campus, college campuses around the country where there were protesters. And some of it can get pretty nasty and vitriolic. I don't mind. I was a federal agent for 30 years. You develop a leathery skin, maybe a Kevlar skin altogether. But what was remarkable, almost inevitably when I'm done speaking, the protesters, almost all of them will come up to me and say, I had no idea. I didn't realize who you were. I didn't understand the issue. I've been reading this stuff, and I thought you were this evil guy, and now suddenly I understand that you're not. It's great getting that kind of vindication, but it infuriates me that we as a people have allowed people who are willing to demagogue topics that can have such a profound, harmful impact on all of us to get away with this nonsense.
Well, no question. And if you go back to the origins of the current global warming movement that began right after the 1970s cooling ended, you'll see that it was all based on power, politics, and money, and had little to do with the underlying science. So when you do confront people with the science, with the facts, like you did in your college presentations, they come up and they say, wow, I had no idea.
So we should wear buttons and say, don't confuse me with the facts.
Well, that's what you don't see in the mainstream media and in the White House these days, is the facts on climate change.
Absolutely remarkable. How has your family reacted to all of this? You know, being controversial can be challenging sometimes, can't it?
Well, very much so, especially early on when I was criticized so heavily. A lot has changed. If you go to the web now and you do a Google search on me and climate and the cold air and so forth, you'll find there's probably now 30 positive websites and statements to every one negative, as opposed to the other way around when I first started.
Well, you should be commended for doing that. You know, I think that's really important. And by the way, folks, this comes back to something that I've always said. And one of the reasons that I'm so upset with the way we deal with bullies these days, you know, I was a scrawny kid, and my dad will always be my biggest hero. He was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He was absolutely fearless. He was a man's man. I lost him when I was 19. He was 57. I literally took him off his job his last day of work. He had lung cancer. But next to my dad, the astronauts and test pilots were always my heroes. So my friends who loved baseball, and going back to that era, Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris and Whitey Ford, I could have cared less. To me, the big deal was Scott Crossfield and Chuck Yeager and Ivan Kinchelo and Ed White and those guys. And because I didn't like sports, you could imagine how nasty it got, because it doesn't take much for a nonconformist to find that he's got a problem. And because I was as scrawny as a reed, I used to get the crap beat out of me routinely until my dad said, look, you've got to learn to stand up for yourself. You've got to put on some weight. I'm going to send you to a gym. You've got to learn to defend yourself. And he said, you got three rules of engagement that I think America should follow. He said, you don't throw the first punch. You make damn sure you throw the last punch. If anyone ever throws a punch at you, you never again walk by them with your hands in your pockets. And he said, and for God's sakes, if you have to have a fight with somebody, it damn well better be decisive. Otherwise, you're only going to have to fight that clown next week again. But we learn to take care of ourselves. We have become a nation today where we're expecting the government to defend us from the bullies. And don't misunderstand, folks. Bullies are vile, reprehensible creatures, and they don't always throw punches at you. The words they can hurl can be every bit as harmful and hurtful, and maybe more so. And we see this all the time. But we really need to become a nation of two-fisted Americans. And I don't mean going around punching people, but I mean standing up for what you believe in. One of the biggest things that disturbs me is that we have shied away from speaking our mind. That right to speak our mind is not only in our Constitution, but it's a right that was fought for by soldiers throughout the founding of this country who lost their lives or at the very least were seriously injured defending those rights. Don't go quietly into the night. If you disagree with someone and they try to use name-calling or intimidation, go after them. They're fair game. They're yours. Go and teach them the lesson that you don't push people around that way. Would you disagree with what I'm saying?
You've got to stand up, and we had a similar parental lessons learned or upbringing, if you will. My dad was ex-military, but he was very strong on integrity, and I got bit by that bug early on. And when I first discovered these solar cycles back in April of 07, I realized I had been deceived for decades. And I took it upon myself to launch a personal campaign to make sure every person I could get in touch with, including our leaders and the media and everyone on the street corner, knew the truth about the climate and were getting prepared for this new cold era. And it was all based on integrity.
Well, I agree with you. My, as you can imagine, my upbringing was similar. My folks, my mom was an immigrant, came here ahead of the Holocaust, but it was about integrity and standing for something. And, of course, after 9/11, as a New Yorker, you know, my neighbors were killed. I decided I needed to go forward. In fact, I testified without authority. It cost me my career, but it was worth it. At the end, we got things resolved. I jokingly tell people my name is Cutler, not Custer. Don't confuse the two names. But we really need to stand for what we believe in. And that's really what America has always been about, and it needs to continue to be about. I certainly have to tell you, John, you exemplify that, because I know that this has not been an easy road for you to hoe.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I do have a core of friends and family still around me. I had a lot of friends before I made my announcement, but somehow they disappeared real quick.
then they weren't real friends, were they?
They weren't real friends. That's right.
You can tell who your friends are. You know, it's easy to invite people to a party. See what happens when you have a problem and need some help.
Yep.
That's when you find out who's for real.
Yep. Well, this new cold climate is for real. Over the last 6 years, we've gradually been making headway. I was the first to notify the White House, the mainstream media, and the Congress that this new cold climate was coming. And now we have a lot more people standing up and saying the same thing. So we are making some progress.
When you say you went to the White House, was this the Bush White House or the Obama White House?
I made sure both knew about it. But the Bush White House was on the way out back then. But even before President Obama won, the entire McCain team and the Obama team were notified by me on several occasions of my research in this new cold climate coming and the end of global warming. And I kept that up after the Obama administration took over. But then it was pretty clear they were going to march toward this new socialist one-world order and use man-made global warming as a tool, and the science really didn't matter to them.
Don't confuse me with the facts.
Right.
Have you been before congressional hearings?
No, and certainly during the period of the time when the Democrats ruled the House as well. And I'm no longer welcome in the White House, of course, although I was quite welcome in the one before. I have offered my services to the House Science Committees and those that oversee the activities on climate and environment there, and likewise the Senate, but the Senate is still controlled by the Democratic Party, and they don't want to hear about global cooling right now.
They do a good job of sticking their fingers in their ears.
Yeah, it's clearly not politically correct to say that global warming has ended and we've had no effective increase in temperature for 16-plus years. And it's certainly not politically correct to say, hey, we're hitting into 30 years of dangerous cold weather.
Wow.
Yeah, all of the things that we were told by the UN and parroted by the Obama administration simply have not come true. All that we were told about the effect of mankind and CO2 on the atmosphere is proven wrong. The atmosphere is not nearly as sensitive to CO2, for example, as we were told it was, and a lot of other things never manifested themselves.
Tom, we're getting close to the top of the hour. Do you have any final thoughts, questions for John Casey?
Well, I just like to say this cabal of environmentalist scientists and politicians tip their hand when it comes to global warming because of the insincerity of the specifics of their programs. For example, no CO2 emissions credit are allowed for CO2-free nuclear power because it would embarrass the environmental groups that spent decades denouncing nuclear power. So a great source of energy that is CO2-free, but it gets no credit.
Well, absolutely. And if you go back to when this all started, it actually got most of its impetus when Margaret Thatcher was having to deal with the coal union strikes seriously affecting the UK and economy back in the 80s. She was the one that actually funded the two universities and started one of them directly that had become later the UN's primary research organizations for man-made global warming. And she did all that so she could convert to nuclear and get rid of the coal unions. But, of course, she never understood until it was too late the monster she had created by funding all this man-made global warming research.
Amazing. Well, John, let's put your website out there, the name of your book again. We have to have you back. I mean, this is a fascinating conversation. I hope you enjoyed joining us this Friday evening.
Always a pleasure to get the word out and make sure people know the truth about the climate. The website for the company is spaceandscience.net. The word and is spelled out, spaceandscience.net. And the book is Cold Sun, and so the book website is coldsun.net.
Well, I thank you so much, John, for joining us. I hope you have a wonderful weekend coming up, and stay warm.
Will do. Thank you both.
Thank you, John. Tom, you want to run that commercial one more time?
Yes, our sponsor for the evening, Kohl's Department Store. Don't miss out on their great sales this weekend and the start of their Summer Begins sale beginning next Wednesday.
This next song is dedicated to Vicky Cooper. Vicky's a mother of three who recently saved $124 spring shopping at Kohl's. By stacking the savings, she not only took advantage of a great sale, she also saved $20 using her Kohl's cash. Congrats, Vicky. This one's for you.
Great savings that make you go Kohl's. Don't miss Kohl's Get Set for Summer sale starting Wednesday. Kohl's, expect great things.
Well, that's excellent. Tom, if you want to stay with me for a bit, and for those of you that want to hang around a little bit, I just want to run over the immigration component to the Boston bombing and to what's going on up in Canada with this Tunisian suspect who apparently was arrested on April 22nd and just charged yesterday with, of all things, visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud, two issues that I've been hammering at. And by the way, folks, you'll notice that Mr. Schumer would just have you watch the Mexican border and ignore all these other failings, which in this case facilitated the entry and would have facilitated the embedding of yet another terrorist in the United States. And by the way, if you want to talk about a hot time in the old town, their goal was to poison the air and or water. They wanted to run up a casualty figure of approximately 100,000 lives. And the guy who had gotten radicalized, by the way, you'll find this fascinating, is somebody who had actually been working on a PhD in nanotechnology in Canada, in Montreal. And that guy's name was Jaheb Essajayer. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but that's the best I can do. They are both from Tunisia. So if you want to stick with me, your choice, Tom Garcia.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, you and I started chatting back when you first ran for Congress. And, you know, I've been a man on a mission since 9/11. And certainly your service to our country is something that we should all be very grateful for and appreciative of as a naval aviator. You did a great job of trying to defend us. And then I look at the politicians who apparently could care less about national security as long as there's a buck to be made or some power to be garnered. You know, I know you took your oath seriously. You know I took my oath seriously, and these characters make a mockery of their oath. And what are your thoughts when I can tell you this? And if you go to michaelcutler.net or talkborder.com, there's tons of stuff. In fact, you know, I did my very first hearing. I don't know if you know this, Tom. May 20th, 1997, it was called before the House Immigration Subcommittee by then-chairman of the Judiciary, Henry Hyde. And the topic, this was in the wake of the two terrorist attacks in 93, and the topic was visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. And nothing has been done to address those vulnerabilities. That's why 9/11 happened. If those vulnerabilities that I participated in that hearing, and there were other hearings about the same issue, the Clinton administration did absolutely nothing. But then, of course, I guess they would say, but what difference does it make? Tell that to the victims and their families on 9/11. What difference it makes is that we are vulnerable. We have millions of people in our country right now, folks, in every town and city, from every country on this planet, with no real way of knowing who they are or why they're here. And just a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, the Washington Times ran a very disturbing article that this DACA program, the Deferred Action Childhood Arrival, which is again, just a myth wrapped in a lie. There's nothing childhood about people who can't prove when they got here. It's one thing to say, well, we know when this kid got here, and yes, he's 15 years old, and I'd be sympathetic, and there are provisions in the law to deal with that. But when you have someone 30 years old say, oh, yes, I went to school here, and by the way, I may have used a false name, and the person doesn't even go in for a face-to-face interview. So what the Washington Times found, this is astonishing, was that there is a 99.5% approval rate for applications filed by aliens by mail to participate in the program without even a face-to-face interview. We can't verify their identities. We can't verify who they are or their backgrounds. That means we can't verify how long they've been here, but we're giving them identity documents and whatever name they say is theirs. And so far, they have done this, you ready for this, folks? For 270,000 illegal aliens, giving them authorization to work, making them the equal in the labor pool of American citizens and lawful immigrants, and they are processing more of these folks each and every day. I mentioned this thing about the students. Right now, there are, according to the GAO, 850,000 foreign students in the United States. In 2011, our government issued student visas to 447,000 foreign students from across the planet. There are more than 10,000 schools that are authorized to file the paperwork to bring in foreign students. So we don't even know if these schools exist in the real world. And last year, the GAO, and here's a statistic that should make everybody sleep the sleep of angels. The GAO said that 38% of the flight schools had yet to file the appropriate paperwork with the FAA. And meanwhile, the GAO in that study also noted that they found at least one flight school that was owned and operated by illegal aliens and were training other illegal aliens. But ask Chuck Schumer, and he will tell you, all you need to do is watch the border. And then you have Janet Napolitano, who says, but why should border security even be a part of the issue? Let's just do it. What are your thoughts, Tom? I mean, does this make your head spin? Because I have to tell you, my head is spinning at red line right now just thinking about this.
Well, I'll tell you what. After I read your testimony that you gave to the Senate in, I think it was the end of March, was it?
Yes.
And then we had that Boston bombing. I mean, you literally predicted what occurred. You literally predicted how it would occur, who it would be. I mean, and yet we just continue to move forward with ignoring these massive gaping holes in our national security.
Well, you know what's remarkable, and believe me, there is no satisfaction for me to say I told you so. Before 9/11 happened, I had warned people. I had a screaming match with the counsel over at the Immigration Subcommittee on the Republican side, my friend Art. And, you know, the guys at work knew that I had, obviously, contacts in Capitol Hill. They would tell me what was going on. I was out with a screwed-up knee. I got injured executing arrest and search warrants with the New York City Police Department and the FBI. And so I was sidelined but very active on the phone and doing what I had to do and chatting with congressmen and then that hearing in 97 before I got hurt. So people were calling me up and saying, we can't do the job. We're admitting people under the visa waiver program. And, you know, what I've argued about the visa waiver program is you can't prosecute people for visa fraud if they don't need a visa. At least this guy from Tunisia, his country, thankfully, doesn't subscribe to the visa waiver program. But if he had come here from Great Britain, let's say, and just came in as a tourist, they couldn't have arrested him for visa fraud because there would have been no visa involved, which was one of the other points I made. Well, anyway, I had this big argument with the counsel. He's a good guy. He means well, and he's now an immigration judge. But at the time, we really got into a loud argument. And I finally got angry. This was on a nice fall afternoon. I was driving around New York. My son was in the car. He was a baby at the time. And I said to him, what the blank will it take, another attack at the World Trade Center? You should know, folks, that that was the Friday before 9/11. And after 9/11, he called me up, and other people called me up, and they said to me, I used to think you were Chicken Little. And I said, I wish I still was. So I go before the Senate Judiciary Committee, just March 20th, that's what you're referring to, made those points that we're still vulnerable, and then we get attacked in Boston. And again, it was people that gamed the process. And, you know, I'm a very big proponent for giving political asylum to people who are truly deserving of it. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. As a B'nai B'rith president back in college, and back in high school, we participated in demonstrations in Washington. Lyndon Johnson at the time was the occupant of the Oval Office. And we asked him, please go to the Russians, go to the Soviet leaders, and get them to permit Jews and other minorities to leave the Soviet Union to go to any country that would have them so they could practice religious freedom and escape the tyranny and the persecution that they're facing in Russia. And Johnson was actually able to do. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King sent Ralph Abernathy over to one of our demonstrations, read a telegram of support telling us we were basically doing God's work and that they stood with us. President Johnson sent a telegram, something that we don't do anymore, saying that he was appreciative of our practice of democracy and petitioning the government to seek redress of a grievance in this case and that he would do it. And I will tell you that as an inspector sitting in a booth at Kennedy Airport, it was absolutely a joyous moment when I got to admit refugees from the old Soviet Union into the United States because I feel that we had closed the circle. So I am not against political asylum. We are at our best when we are being compassionate. But when our enemy can see in our compassion, in our kindness, weakness, and we allow them to get away with it because we are too lazy or incompetent to screen people before we permit them to enter the United States, then that's unacceptable. It's not about not showing compassion. It's about not showing stupidity. It's about not showing incompetence. Because I think of that little 8-year-old boy and those other two people who died and the hundreds of people who lost limbs or were irrevocably injured, who will never, ever, under any circumstances, be the same, and the harm that this did to their families, friends, and colleagues. And we know that tomorrow it could happen again. These Tunisian dirtbags wanted to take out a train and wanted to poison 100,000 Americans. So we caught them, okay? And how many more are out there right now, perhaps working in a basement somewhere, working in a garage somewhere, waiting for the opportunity? You know, we keep hearing this nonsense. It's not really nonsense, but they say, well, we got to be right 100% of the time. They've only got to be right once. And yet Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Mr. Rubio. And by the way, I have to tell you something. I called Senator Rubio's office twice. The first time when I got a recording, I hung up and discussed. The second time, I said, you know something? I'm going to leave a message. So I waited for the recording. And the recording comes on, and I'm paraphrasing, so if anyone calls and you get it slightly different, I didn't record it. But basically the message said, you have reached the offices of Senator Marco Rubio. If you are calling between the hours at 8:30 and 5 or 9 and 5 or whatever, you're hearing this recording because we're taking other calls. If you wish, you may leave a message. Give us your name, your Florida zip code, a brief message, and your phone number. So my message was very simple. I said, Senator Rubio, my name is Mike Cutler. I do not have a Florida zip code, unfortunately, but I'd be happy to supply you with my New York zip code. I'm a retired agent. I've testified before numerous congressional hearings on comprehensive reform. You will only speak to residents of Florida? Well, guess what? Your legislation that you're toiling away with seven other members of the Senate, would have a profound and irrevocable impact on every American, even those who don't have a Florida zip code. The least you could do is take messages from any American citizen from anywhere in the United States. And I left my phone number. I am not holding my breath. And then I have to tell you to listen to the Benghazi hearing and listen to Hillary Clinton's recorded thing of what difference does it make and the Democrats marching lockstep with the administration. I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm ashamed and embarrassed because of these clowns that call themselves representatives. I will tell you that I did probably 8 hearings or more for the Republicans when President George W. Bush was in the White House, and they knew I was going to paddle the president for doing the wrong thing where immigration was concerned. And in fact, I spoke with people on Jim Sensenbrenner's staff because it was Sensenbrenner who called me to testify at a number of those hearings, including a field hearing that we did in Iowa, and I got to sit down with him for coffee in Iowa. And they knew I was going to come in and be hypercritical and expected me to because they drew the line about politics when national security was on the line. Would that the Democrats that we saw at that hearing be willing to do the same, put America ahead of politics? You know, Tom, my parents raised me to believe that I could teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. We the people have come to lower the bar tremendously. It seems as though we will accept almost anything from these bozos who were elected to represent us. We really need to be heard. You need to write those letters. You need to make the phone calls. You need to make appointments to sit down and meet with your representatives, whether it's your congressmen, your senators, members of your city council, folks from the governor's office. We have been far too quiet for far too long. And we're lousy employers because at the end of the day, folks, these people work for us. We have seen the terrorist attack that was thwarted, but every time we thwart one, it's like pulling weeds out of your garden. If you can see one weed, there are plenty more that are about to sprout that you still don't see. We better be up for the game because imagine if these guys got away with it. Imagine if they had killed tens of thousands of innocent people. Think about Boston and how horrible that was and how innocence was taken from those people on that sunny day of all things on Patriots Day. And ask yourself, how many more attacks do we need before we make Schumer and the other liars in Washington accountable? And it's a tough word to use against a member of the United States Senate. But when you can stand there in front of the cameras with that smirk and say that comprehensive reform would have prevented the Boston attack, there is no polite way to say liar. That's a lie, and he knows it. He's smart enough to know better. In fact, it was his agricultural program in the 86 amnesty that permitted Mahmoud Abu Alima, one of the terrorists who planted a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center, to get lawful status in the country by lying on his application that he'd worked on a farm. He never did. So Schumer knows this. He's proposing yet another agricultural amnesty. We need to call them out. We need to let these folks know that we're not as stupid as they hoped we are. Forgive me for this long rant, but my rage between the hearings and what we witnessed in Boston and what I'm seeing in the media with the Tunisian case, as I say, my head is spinning at red line right now. What are your thoughts, Tom?
Well, I'll just say this, that I do have a let me adjust my microphone there. I do have
more better.
A Florida zip code, and guess what? I sent a letter to Marco Rubio, and I got not only a form letter back, but a form letter that said, I'll get back to you. What do you think of that?
Well, if you speak to them, could you tell them that there is an irate New Yorker who has paid his dues and would very much like the opportunity to speak with him?
Absolutely. I'll let him know.
Because, you know, once you drive the bus off the cliff, it's a little bit too late to say, well, let's try to put the pieces back. God forbid it should happen, but when there's a plane crash, the NTSB, am I getting that right, comes out to investigate it to try to find out what's wrong. The Dreamliners, the 787s, had a problem with the lithium-ion battery, a fire hazard. They grounded the plane before there was a crash. We had an amnesty in 86. That largely is being paralleled by the garbage that they're parading in front of us now. The 86 amnesty crashed and burned. How many more times do you fly a defective airplane before you figure it out? And this time the smoking hole that it would make in the middle of America is possibly a population of 40 million illegal aliens whose backgrounds, intentions, affiliations are unknown and unknowable. The impact on everything from critical infrastructure to national security to the economy to the plight of America's middle class and working poor would be irrevocable. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. Once you're in free fall off that cliff in the bus, you can't go, oops, let's go back to the cliff. You know, gravity is inevitable. So we really need to make certain that we get our voices heard. Would you not agree with me, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's the whole terror aspect, the whole aspect of who's actually coming in. Just because they're illegal immigrants doesn't mean they're poor Hispanics, poor Mexicans, poor Guatemalans. It means they're anybody that says, hey, I am an illegal immigrant. I'm coming out of the shadows, and I want you to. But one of the aspects that a lot of people don't understand, and I can attest to this as an American of Hispanic heritage, these are people, just the Hispanic people, the Mexican people, the vast majority of illegal immigrants that come from a country that does not value the kind of liberty and freedom we have. Everybody thinks they do. That they do not. They come from a socialist country. They value socialism and class warfare. These are not people that will ever support, regardless of what they raise their hand and say, that will ever support our Constitution. They never will.
You know, it's just remarkable what politicians will do to feather their own political nests. There are a couple of heroes out there, and we should commend them. People like my friend Lou Barletta from Hazleton, and Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, Steve King, congressman from Iowa, Senator Vitter, another good guy. There are a few real good players on the Hill, but not enough of them. They need our support, just as those who are voting against us need to hear from us. You know, don't go quietly into the night, folks. There's nothing inevitable about bad legislation. We, the people, have the right to be heard. We need to do it professionally. We need to do it calmly. You know, don't threaten anybody. Don't jump up and down and scream. No one listens to that. But you need to be able to write a letter and explain that, you know something, this idea of putting millions of people on the back of the line is a farce, because that line is inside the United States. And while you're waiting on that line, you may work. So it may take 10 years before you can become a citizen. Most people don't want that. In fact, we give out over 1 million green cards a year, but only about 600,000 immigrants actually naturalize. So nearly half of the people who have the opportunity to naturalize don't. Their goal is not necessarily citizenship. Their goal is threefold. Number one, to work. Number two, to be able to freely travel across our borders. And by the way, that's of critical importance to terrorists. The 9/11 Commission found that to be the case. And finally, they want to be able to bring family members here. Well, guess what? Under comprehensive immigration reform, those three objectives are authorized within days of approval. Okay? That's how long that line is. So when you hear the nonsense that they're not going to be getting whatever quickly, and when they say no welfare, well, that means that the states have to ask. If the states do as they do in New York and Illinois and California and elsewhere and say, we're not going to ask, then they will get all of those programs. The impact on education, the impact on health care, the impact on infrastructure, whether it's how many people are waiting for a bus or a train, or how many cars are going to be on the highway, or how many people are going to be buying home heating oil. Understand that the impact is huge. The Chamber of Commerce is the engine behind a lot of this. They're not the only ones. The Chamber of Commerce would have everybody living in America the way they fly people, and I hate to say this, Tom, but in coach, where on some airplanes you almost have your knees in your mouth. How many people can we squeeze on the airplane so that we can increase revenue? That's what we're doing to the United States today. Not everybody gets to ride in first class, but, you know, unfortunately, certain carriers should be called sardine airlines. American is not one of them, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. Somehow, between big labor and corporations and the socialists that live within our country, I think this is all a great thing to boost, as you say, their political power, et cetera. But it is going to just drag us down into the proverbial toilet. It really is going to make a huge difference for us. Any of you out there that have kids that are going to be going to college anytime in the next 10, 15 years, they're going to get to compete with children from other countries. Is that fair? Who's looking out for your kids? Our politicians are more concerned about families from other countries than they are your family.
Well, you know, what was so remarkable, and we're getting close to the bottom of the hour and the end of the show for this evening, but what was remarkable, and I have to keep coming back to it, was when Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer on April 30th, 2009, about comprehensive immigration reform. Can we do it and how? And I said, you know, it reminded me of that apocryphal law firm, Dewey Cheatham and Howe. But Greenspan talked about how we needed to import foreign workers because we'd made a privileged elite out of Americans with skills. I kid you not, his words, privileged elite, earning a wage premium because they weren't exposed to competition. The immigration laws say that it's illegal to make American workers compete with foreign workers for jobs. It's illegal to hire foreign workers if in so doing it displaces Americans or drives down wages or working conditions of Americans. But don't tell that to Alan Greenspan because he doesn't care about such technicalities. And he said that another advantage to opening the floodgates, opening up the quotas, would be to get foreign families to live in the homes that are now vacated by American families. Housing units, as he called them. Because he said the disabling of the banking system happened because of the mortgage problem. Well, he was the force behind the mortgage problem because he was the guy that was behind the subprime mortgages for illegal aliens whose backgrounds and true credit ratings could never be determined. This is like Bloomberg, who creates a sanctuary city or at least keeps it going and then has the chutzpah to say that the solution for congested New York is to charge New Yorkers in their own city a congestion price fee if you want to drive into Midtown Manhattan during business hours. I will create the congestion, and I will charge you for it. This is a better racket than Tony Soprano's protection racket, where he promises not to throw a brick through your window. And this is what is now passing for political leadership in all too many of our cities and states, the federal government itself. folks, you have a responsibility. You know, I always end commentaries by saying that democracy is not a spectator sport. If you are as outraged as I am, and I suspect you are if you're listening to me this evening, and I thank you for being there. It's always good to join you at the end of the week and catch up. Then do something. Get your voice heard. Do it now. Not after they vote for comprehensive immigration reform, legislation that I once described as being the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. In fact, Jeff Sessions liked it so much back in 2007 when I wrote that commentary for the Washington Times that he quoted me from the floor of the Senate during the floor debate, and unlike some politicians, had the integrity and the moral decency to not simply plagiarize my statement, but he actually sent me a certificate commemorating that he had done it and made certain to say that it was the statement I had made. He's such an unusual guy, Jeff Sessions. But, you know, it really is the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. I want you to get your voices heard on Monday morning. I want you to make the phone calls. I want you to write the letters. I want you to make arrangements to meet with the staffers for those members of Congress, whether it's your two senators or your congressional representative in the House. And by the way, if you like the work your congressman is doing, if you are blessed enough that Lou Barletta, for example, is your congressman, write him a letter and tell him thank you. Tell him thank you. I support you. I appreciate you. Because you know what? Those guys are banging their heads against the wall. I can assure you that the Lou Barlettas and the Jeff Sessions and the Chuck Grassleys and the Steve Kings don't have too many friends on Capitol Hill. Better they should have friends among us, we the people. So please take the time to thank them also. And even if you're not in their district, doesn't do any harm to put an envelope in the mail, or actually the envelopes don't work all that well because they screen everything. They won't see it for quite some time. Make a phone call, send an email or a fax, because they do receive those. And a little bit of support, I think, would go a long way for those beleaguered few who really stand with us. Anyway, Tom Garcia, we're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to give you your last thought, and then we're going to sign off. And I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm going to be back, of course, again next week, hopefully with another good, interesting program for all of you. But, Tom, here you go.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Michael. I just want to say thank you for having me on the show, and everybody have a great weekend.
Tom, I wish you the same. Travel safely. Where are you heading to this week?
Actually, I'm going out to my recurrent training, my annual 4 days of grind through simulator, emergency procedures, and all that kind of stuff. So I won't actually be flying an airplane this week. I'll be flying a simulator.
Even more fun than a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a blast.
Well, safe landings to you, Tom.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Good night.
Good night. Folks, that was Tom Garcia, retired naval aviator, former Top Gun instructor, and my partner in crime in bringing this radio program to you every Friday night. I want to thank you all for joining me. Once again, I want to remind you the three websites I would love for you to visit, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, and, of course, to my good friends out in California, California's Population Stabilization, their website, capsweb.org. Hang in there, folks. Get your voice heard. Democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next week, same time. Good weekend, everybody.